Innovation Minds presents At the Edge, a podcast about using innovation to empower and drive engagement. The nature of work has changed. Companies around the world are struggling to find the right balance in the new work-from-home hybrid paradigm. As much of the workforce begins to go back to the office after more than a year working remotely, how can leaders keep their employees engaged and collaborating successfully? In this podcast, we interview thought leaders from business and hear their stories and viewpoints on how to use innovation to engage the workforce, as well as how to innovate engagement.
One of the things that everyone keeps debating is, oh, are we more productive at home, or are we more productive in the office? Hybrid is not going away, and you have to expect that every activity, every meeting you need to hold, there's going to be some combination of people who are in the office and people who are work from anywhere. You need people who are going to think through not just individual technology trends, but the intersection of trends. You've got to understand that we're in this VUCA world. There's a lot of uncertainty and there's a lot of variability, and you've got to be able to have that flexibility.
Bob Pulver is Global Head of Business Development at Innovation Minds. Previous to this, he was the Director of IT Strategy and Innovation at NBC Universal Media. And before that, he spent nearly 15 years at IBM in a wide variety of roles, most recently as the Global Program Leader of Cognitive Innovation. All right, Bob, welcome to At the Edge, and thank you very much for being here.
Great to be here, Michael.
You know, let's start by giving people a little bit of insight into why you're here. Tell us a bit about your history with employee engagement, innovation, basically, you know, with the workplace.
I spent most of my career at IBM in a variety of roles doing supply chain transformation, process, what we used to call process reengineering or process transformation. I quickly moved into doing some work around requirements management, so what today you would call product management, building some internal products, and then quickly got involved in some innovation management or enterprise innovation programs that IBM was establishing. So they had built their own proprietary idea management, you know, platform. I was a volunteer to help not only submit ideas, but help ideas find homes, find sponsors. It was just fascinating to me to see how much people wanted to contribute, that they were going beyond their day jobs to, you know, share their wisdom and their insight from the front lines. And so it just sparked this curiosity in me that led me to kind of diverging from just climbing the corporate ladder, so to speak, and just doing what I thought was meaningful to me, things that would keep me engaged in my work and, you know, make me glad to, you know, be doing what I was doing at the heart of, you know, emerging technology. And I stayed there throughout my career, focusing on areas like what we used to call social business. We might call it digital transformation today. But really, how do you rally people around, you know, common causes and finding solutions collectively to, you know, some of the challenges that were happening either at the company or across industries and things like that. So really getting into these concepts of, collective intelligence, crowdsourcing, really before there was, you know, such a, you know, the gig marketplace and the gig economy and all those things really were still sort of nascent. But yeah, I just kind of constantly carved my own path, looking at things that would help, you know, companies really get the full benefit of everything that people had to offer. And then, you know, marrying that, of course, with emerging technology. So a lot of the work at IBM around what they called, you know, augmented intelligence, not just artificial intelligence, with the birth of IBM Watson, you know, I was at the heart of that. And, you know, that continued to fascinate me and want to keep me, you know, sort of as an early adopter and an evangelist of technology.
Although you guys were, you know, ahead of your time, by the time you've left there, things have changed a lot.
So after, you know, weaving around, you know, IBM for, you know, over two decades, I left there and went to NBC Universal, where I had an opportunity to be on the executive team in the CIO's office and work on both strategy and innovation. So I really got to see how I could put some of those, capabilities into practice and start to really wake people up to the art of the possible, as we used to say. And so I did that for a number of years. And then, you know, more recently, I joined the Innovation Minds team to help, grow that business, to help drive, product strategy, obviously wearing a bunch of hats as a startup, always entails. I think there's incredible opportunity now, and people have woken up to, allowing, employees or whatever your relationship is with a company, to bring your whole self to that environment and to that hybrid work environment. So whether you're at home or you're getting back to the office or, some mix of the two, I think it's great to be sort of at the forefront and in the epicenter of all these dramatic changes.
Tell us about some of the changes. I mean, we all know about the Great Resignation and we know about the situation with hybrid work, but what do you see as the opportunities that are ahead of us?
It's interesting because when I reflect back on my career, I start to see the patterns that I didn't necessarily see, at the time or piece it together. But all of these areas that I've been focused on really come back to this concept of human potential, right? And so some of that is, like I said, bringing your whole self to work, making sure that you have the right people in the right roles. I think technology only recently has really enabled that. We certainly dabbled with it back when I was at IBM, especially in my years working with IBM Research. In the mid 2000s, there were all kinds of programs and capabilities around social analytics and understanding what makes people tick and how they're engaged and doing sentiment analysis on how they're contributing, thinking about the ways that they contribute. I think there's been an enormous resurgence of that of late because people have woken up to say, wow, this isn't just like a nice to have, interesting little toy with cool little visualizations about your social network. This is fundamental to how work is getting done, how people stay engaged, and the insight that can be derived from some of those capabilities is critical. You can see the investments being made in this overarching HR technology space. And it's not about HRIS, legacy environments. It's not about back-end stuff. It's about the systems of engagement and the systems of insight that you now have at your disposal to really understand how can I be more effective. And part of that is making sure you've got the right people in the right roles. There's a huge category within HR tech around people analytics. For those of us who sort of were living this, even 10, 15 years ago, it's incredibly rewarding to see that, globally people are recognizing, the power of some of these capabilities. And we see in the market, there's unicorns all over the place to the point where we have to now redefine what it means to be a unicorn. We see it in large enterprises as they are having to basically redefine the mission of HR. They're no longer being protective of the organization and some of the more traditional functions of HR. Now they're much more around how do we do what's best for our people. They've even changed the names of some of these roles, right? Chief People Officer, Chief Talent Officer. So they've really started to think, how is HR going to work more closely with the business to be a strategic advisor and enable, things around people and culture and wellness, diversity, equity, inclusion. These are all really critical elements that companies have had to really rethink. It's the technology that has brought some of these things to light. It's technology that will augment, human capability and human potential. You can take certain things off of people's plates and let them move on to higher value activities where they'll find more meaning. It'll be more rewarding. They'll have more autonomy and they'll just be, happier and more engaged employees.
So what do you think is the secret to making employees satisfied in the future?
You can always ask them, of course, where do they find, meaning? What are they looking to do with their careers? Where do they want to work? Who do they want to work with? What kinds of problems do they want to solve? Some of it is, explicitly, provided by employees just by engaging them. They want to be heard. They want to be listened to. If you want to lower your, you know, attrition rates and increase your engagement rates, you've really got to get pretty deep with the data points to understand, you know, how these people think, how they work. How do you really listen to them? How do you really understand how things are going on an ongoing basis? Because then you can start to align people to opportunities a little bit better. As much as that might sound like a significant effort, think about the payoff. So I think that's one of the critical elements that we need to do and do it at scale.
Why did you join Innovation Minds?
One of my last projects at IBM was leading this entrepreneurial community where they had basically developed a lot of Watson-powered solutions. There was a huge crowdsourcing exercise across the entire company to get everyone to understand the strategic direction of IBM at the time. We've seen them divest from, you know, the PC business, of course, and then some of the infrastructure business to really double down on what they now call, I think, hybrid cloud and AI. So everyone upskilled and they formed teams and they built, you know, in many cases, working prototypes of these AI-based solutions. So I led a team through that. And then I led this community. So I saw the Innovation Minds website, and some of what they were doing, they had basically commercialized the idea that I personally submitted in this IBM contest. It was, how do you make sure that you don't let ideas fall through the cracks? How do you build strong teams? How do you pull in, you know, internal and external insights to make sure you're building a strong business case and understand that there's, you know, product market fit and all the things you need to do as you're scaling, you know, a startup. And I couldn't believe what I was seeing. Like, he had basically done all the things that I had hoped to do. And so my passion for innovation, the fact that there was like this direct, I saw this direct correlation between what I was passionate about at the end of my IBM career and what Bala had built with Innovation Minds. It just seemed like such a natural fit, and I wanted to come in and see what I could do to help.
What do you think is the secret sauce for the future of hybrid work? What is the way that hybrid work can be made as effective as possible?
One of the things that everyone keeps debating is like, oh, are we more productive at home, or are we more productive, you know, in the office? You know, does it depend? You know, hybrid is not going away, and you have to expect that every activity you need to get done, every meeting you need to hold, there's going to be some combination of people who are in the office and people who are work from anywhere. You need people who are going to think through, you know, the not just individual technology trends, but the intersection of trends. And I think that's just the nature of, you know, foresight and futures thinking. You've got to understand that we're in this, you know, VUCA world. There's a lot of uncertainty and there's a lot of variability, and you've got to be able to have that flexibility. And the only way to do that without losing, you know, a tremendous amount of productivity is to have technology be able to, you know, sense and suggest those kinds of things. That sort of thought process, I think, is needed as you design some of the things that people are going to need, regardless of where they happen to be working from.
So let's talk about AI a bit. You know, you worked on Watson. What are the benefits of AI, and how can it be most taken advantage of?
I think you've got to clearly define AI and what problems it's solving, how it's helping humans, not taking work or decisions away from human beings necessarily. The concept of augmented intelligence, I did, you know, buy into, because there's still humans programming it in the first place. And then also, you know, there's still in the healthcare space, there's still a doctor ultimately responsible for that decision, right? It's just, how can they possibly be expected to read every medical journal and know every possible condition when someone, you know, a patient walks into their office? So you really need that technology to support human decision-making.
What's the way that the average company can incorporate artificial intelligence into their processes?
There's a couple of different ways. First of all, there's, you know, there are capabilities that, you know, AI providers may have, like a marketplace where you can tap into specific APIs and capabilities, and you can basically embed those into your own solution, just like you would any other API to do, you know, integration. A lot of the big cloud vendors have provided all kinds of, you know, toolkits that allow you to build much more easily than you could a decade ago, but allow you to build some of your own capabilities and build your own models. A lot of startups have had to customize and build their own AI models because there's a specific data set that they needed to be, you know, trained on, or it's just something so niche that the big providers never invested in that level of detail. You know, some of the conversational AI bots, a lot of those were, they were sort of generic, like you could plug them in, but then you had to train them significantly on your own corpus of data and use cases. There was a startup that I was talking to, it was doing conversational AI that supports restaurants. Anyone who's been through a drive-through restaurant and has experienced the horrible quality of the speakers at some of those restaurant drive-throughs, if they can't hear you or you can't hear them, you really just rolling the dice of whether they got your order right. The founder gave me a demo of this solution, and it was amazing how accurate it was. I mean, this person kept changing their orders. Oh, can you add this? Can you add that? Oh, no, I don't want, you know, don't put ketchup on that, whatever. And it could support multiple languages. That's the kind of accuracy that people expect. So if you can exceed their expectations, it becomes a memorable experience instead of just a routine Friday night visit to Arby's or whatever.
Is this the future we're facing, though, that everybody's worried about, right? The robot apocalypse, everybody's going to lose their jobs unless they're highly educated or incredibly creative. How is this going to work for people?
I've been following the automation space for quite a while. This was a big focus area for me when I was at NBC Universal, trying to, you know, find different ways to automate things. There's always been a lot of work that is left undone because people are spending too much time doing some of the more mundane tasks that are on their plate. I've always looked at it as, I'm not trying to automate jobs and remove people from the equation. That's the last thing I want to do. I've been unemployed. It's not fun, and I don't wish it on anybody, because it's not spending the 20 to 40% of your time doing things that a machine or some robotic process automation tool or even some more advanced automation tool could do on your behalf to free you up to do all these other things, right? So every time I've asked anyone, it could be an individual contributor, it could be a manager, it could be an executive, how much time of your day do you think is wasted? Or what else would you be doing if you weren't doing, you know, this task or that task, right? And so there's always an answer. It's not like they would be sitting around twiddling your thumbs, or their work week would be 20, 25 hours instead of 40, 50, even 60 hours. There's always other things that are not getting done. So what's the opportunity cost? Why not just free people up to move on to those higher value tasks? So the goal is to identify what are those tasks that don't really give anyone any particular, you know, meaning or satisfaction to do that a machine could do. How could you write a script to program it to do certain things? It's, you know, so anyone who's, you know, has a smart home may know that, you know, there's scripts behind the scenes that say, if, you know, if this happens, then do this. As you get deeper and move up the automation maturity curve, so to speak, you move past these basic scripts of and robotic process automation, and you move to more intelligent and even cognitive automation. So there is an intersection of AI and automation where it can actually look at all kinds of conditions and understand the context. And so that could be, you know, investment decisions. It could be, you know, medical decisions. It could be supply chain decisions. You know, supply chain itself, logistics is an enormously complex challenge that, you know, research teams have been working on for decades. I think the key is to get people to recognize that technology has always advanced. There's always been technology that comes along and displaces certain tasks that people do. But the goal is to not have everybody sit on the couch and let robots do everything. The goal is to let people reach their potential and find meaning in their work. All these automation efforts, what's it going to mean to us? And how do we get people who are not necessarily unemployed, but underemployed? Like, these people, there's so many people that are capable of so much more, and they might not even be aware of what they're capable of. So that goes back to some of the assessments that I talked about earlier about like what are people really want to do and where do they find meaning and what are they good at? You know, taking all these things is a win-win, right? Like you may think it's people are asking too many questions or they're trying to take my job away, or ultimately the goal should be for the company to be successful and the employee to be successful. This is not a zero-sum game, right? This can be a win-win situation by moving people to, you know, more meaningful work. You've got a sort of lifelong relationship. I haven't worked at IBM since 2017, so 4.5 years ago. I'm still a big IBM advocate. I still am proud of what they do, and they should appreciate that. It doesn't have to be hire to retire. The whole employee experience extends into the post-employment, you know, alumni, because I can always refer people to IBM. I can always advocate for them. So relationships don't necessarily end just because I'm no longer a W-2, you know, IBM employee.
What would you say if you had to give people a message that's Bob Pulver's message?
As I reflect back on all the things that I've done, and I try to weave a story through that, you know, lattice of my career, those themes around, you know, that human potential, I think keeps sticking in my mind. And so I guess I would want people to really think about, take a really, you know, deep look at what you find, you know, meaningful, in life and work. Like, what do you really want to work on? And don't hold yourself back, and don't take a victim mentality and think, you know, oh, this automation's coming. Like, what am I going to do? And fall on your heels. You can take an active role in shaping your career wherever you are in your career trajectory. And so I would just encourage everyone to think about what brings you meaning. How can you think about technology not as something coming to take your job, but something to help you do whatever job you choose to do? But don't underestimate yourself. Always, you know, be learning and thinking about how you solve problems, and don't be a different person at work than you are at home. And don't sacrifice your values for a paycheck. When you're at the end of your career and you're reflecting back, you will at least know that you did things that you found meaning in, and you found success, and were more engaged and a better, you know, teammate, a better leader, a better mentor, et cetera. If you know that you've brought your whole self to work, being sort of mid-career, I mean, and reflecting back on all the things that I've done, I don't really regret any of the experiences. I don't regret, you know, jumping off that corporate ladder and taking a more lattice approach. Of late, I've seen a lot of advice that talks about that. And it's, you know, it's nice to hear that, because I've been living that for most of my career. If I see something else I want to do, I make a pivot and I go do it. And I don't care, you know, what people think, or, you know, why he was a director. Why didn't he become a VP? I didn't want to be a VP, right? I wanted to go and work and solve interesting problems. I had enough large enterprise experience. I decided to go off on my own, which I always thought about doing. And now I did it. And now I'm working on really interesting problems, helping young companies grow, helping them understand what those large enterprises are all about, how to navigate them as potential, you know, clients. Things like that. And so sometimes you just got to take some risks, especially if the upside is deeper satisfaction, better work-life balance. It's important that you really think deeply about what's important to you.
Well, thanks, Bob Pulver. Really appreciate the time you've given us. And thanks for sharing all of that information from IBM to Innovation Minds.
Thanks very much, Michael.
This has been At the Edge, a podcast from Innovation Minds. We look forward to hosting you on our next episode, which you can find through the same channel you got here with today. Please join our LinkedIn group, where you can discuss every episode. You can find the link in the show notes. We're really glad you were here, and thank you very much from Innovation Minds.